The American Civil Liberties Union has announced a $300 million plan to expand in Texas and the Heartland. We'll ask Constitutional Attorney Kelly Shackelford what that means to your religious freedom. And what would George Washington think as religious references are expunged from the public square? We'll discuss it with the author of a new book on our first president. This is Jerry Johnson live from Criswell College. Join us as we look at today's news from the Christian Worldview for Christ and Culture.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
I have a dream.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yes. And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
We will not tire, we will not falter, and we will not fail.
Welcome to Jerry Johnson Live. For the next hour, this is your place for relevant discussion of topics in the news and in our culture from a Christian perspective. Later in the show, we'll open the toll-free lines for your questions and comments. You may also email us at talk@jerryjohnsonlive.com. Now, here is Penna Dexter.
Child trafficking is a major problem on Main Street, USA.
The feds are cracking down on child prostitution. That was Ernie Allen. He is the president of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. He told reporters today that child trafficking doesn't only happen overseas. The occasion was a massive child prostitution sweep affecting several cities across the country, including Dallas, Texas. Ernie Allen, again, president of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, said there's evidence that programs like the Innocence Lost Initiative are needed.
University of Pennsylvania research indicated that nearly 300,000 American youth are at risk of becoming victims of commercial sexual exploitation. Most of them runaways or thrownaways.
These kids are children whose families have shunned them for the most part, and this is a good thing that the government is cracking down on these people. The mission of this Innocence Lost National Initiative is to combat this problem of sexual exploitation of children through prostitution. And among those arrested in this sweep are pimps and prostitutes. Some of them are actually in their 20s, but they're said to have admitted selling sex since their early teens. And this was something that federal law enforcement told reporters. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me today. I am Penna Dexter. And this press conference that we're discussing was also, Ernie Allen was also joined by FBI Director Robert Mueller. Here he is announcing the results of this undercover child prostitution sting operation.
This operation, known as Operation Cross Country, included takedown operations in 16 cities across the country and led to the removal of 21 children from the cycle of victimization.
Now, these raids occurred in rundown neighborhoods and also interstate truck stops. This is really, folks, this is 21st century slavery, and the Internet has a lot to do with it. FBI Director Robert Mueller says that this is the fifth anniversary of this Innocence Lost initiative.
We together have no higher calling than to protect our children and to safeguard their innocence.
I think the government is taking this seriously. Director Mueller said officials are having to battle new ways that criminals are exploiting children.
We are faced with the increasing use of social networking sites and other advances in technology to carry out these crimes and facilitate these criminal enterprises.
And as I said, many of these children are actually forced into prostitution. They've run away from home or they're throwaway children. And officials are saying that they are preyed upon by these organized networks of pimps who lure them in with either shelter or with drugs. They often beat them or starve them or otherwise abuse them and until the children agree to work in the streets. And there's another related story. It's very interesting. The Supreme Court is handing down some of its final decisions here as the month of June winds down. The Supreme Court handed down this decision today against imposing the death penalty for the rape of a child. More from Washington.
In a narrow 5-4 ruling, the High Court overturned a Louisiana law saying that imposing the death penalty for rape violates the Constitution's ban on cruel and unusual punishment. In writing the majority opinion, Justice Anthony Kennedy said the death penalty is not a proportional punishment for the rape of a child. The justices split along ideological lines in the ruling, with four liberal justices joining Kennedy, while four conservatives, including the Chief Justice, dissented. Jerry Bodlander, Washington.
It's one of those split decisions with Anthony Kennedy sort of making the difference there. The court says that this was not a proportional punishment for the rape of a child. And so some of the arguments had to do with how the rape of a child affects a child for his or her entire life. And, of course, the state of Louisiana felt that they did have the right to impose a death penalty. And so it was really a state's right decision. So let me just ask you right now to weigh in on this. Should a state be allowed to impose a death penalty for the rape of a child? We'll take your calls. 800-881-9270. That's 800-881-9270. Did the Supreme Court get it wrong today? And just going into this court decision a little bit more, this declaration by the court was that executions are just, they're too severe of a punishment for child rape. And even though these years of anguish that are felt by the victims really changed their lives forever, again, it was a 5-4 decision. The Louisiana law allowed capital punishment for people convicted of raping children under the age of 12. This ruling also invalidates laws on the books in five other states that have outlawed executions for child rape. What do you think? Does child rape merit the death penalty? What about the right of the state of Louisiana to make its own laws? 800-881-9270. Now, the executive director of the Death Penalty Information Center, Richard Dieter, says the High Court is actually showing some consistency here in its ruling on the death penalty for child rape.
The court is keeping with its theories in the child rape case, looking back to their exclusion of juveniles, the exclusion of the mentally retarded, and saying the country has moved away from the death penalty for these kinds of offenders or offenses.
But the death penalty is still legal and constitutional, and states also have rights to impose their own punishments. So we'd love to hear what you think about it. I know the calls are calling in. Again, the executive director of this Death Penalty Information Center, Richard Dieter, saying victims groups also agree with this court's ruling.
It was felt that the death penalty really wouldn't help child victims. It would make them less likely to report the crime, to testify against a family relative who may have committed such a crime.
Well, whatever. Also, a little bit later in the program, we're going to talk about our freedoms, especially our religious freedom. We're going to discuss what's happening to those freedoms, what some great people like Kelly Shackelford are doing about it, and what role our founders meant for religion to play in the government. To do that, we're going to interview Kelly Shackelford from Liberty Legal Institute. He's going to give us his opinion on this court ruling, other rulings that came down today from the Supreme Court. He's also going to tell us about plans by the American Civil Liberties Union to expand their influence in America's heartland, including Texas. Watch your freedoms, folks. He's also going to talk about efforts to protect veterans' memorials around the country, honoring those people who have fought and died for us. They're threatened. Then also later in the program, Tara Ross will join us. She's a Dallas attorney. She's just written a book on why our first president, George Washington, did not believe in the separation between church and state. He believed that the state should encourage religion. And then later in the program, I'll give you an update on the same-sex marriage issue and those marriages that are taking place in the state of California. But we are taking your calls, 800-881-9270. First up is Reba in Ballinger. Hi, Reba. Thanks for calling in.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say that I feel like it should be the state's right to enforce whatever punishment they see fit. And I also think that they should be able to execute the child rapist or any rapist. And I think that if they executed a few of them, then that would go to serve as an example to what will happen to the others. And for fear of the execution, I think that you would get less rape.
You know, there's a big argument as to whether the death penalty is a deterrent or not. And some people say it's not a deterrent because it takes so long for people to actually receive the death penalty. I mean, it seems like some of these folks are on death row for years and years. But I still agree with you, Reba. I think it would be a deterrent to child rape. Maybe people would think about it a little more because sometimes we do tend to be lenient there. And so thank you for that opinion and that call. I tend to agree with you. Let's go now to Bob in Terrell. Bob, thanks for calling in.
Yes, Penny, the state should have the right to do whatever they deem to be the right judgment. If they can't kill them, what they need to do is take away their tool and castrate them.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Bobby Jindal, who's the governor of Louisiana, had some thoughts on this. He said, first of all, there are a lot of Louisianans who are pretty angry about this. He said, though, that the opinion reads more like an out-of-control legislative debate than a constitutional analysis. He didn't think that it was constitutionally decided. But Bobby Jindal said, one thing is clear. The members of the court who issued the opinion do not share the same standards as the people of Louisiana. And again, it was a 5-4 split decision, and you can pretty much probably guess who was on what side. But we will ask Kelly Shackelford a little bit more about it later. Right now, we are taking your calls to get your thoughts on the issue, and Pauline is in Denton. Pauline, thanks for calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. And I think for young kids younger than 12 years old, they really have a hard time to know that the rapist is still alive, and they were always paranoid. I think the emotion of suffering that the victim that we need to take into consideration. So I think it's justified to have a death sentence to the crime.
This one commentator, Mr. Dieter, said that he thought young people would not report the crime if they thought the perpetrator was going to be killed. But you're saying that this will help victims because they'll know that this person's not going to come after them again.
That's right.
Interesting thought, and makes a lot of sense. Thanks, Pauline. We appreciate it. There was also one other case decision that was handed down by the high court today, and there are others coming. This whole gun rights case has not been handed down or announced yet, so we're looking forward to that before the end of the month. But the second decision that was announced today reduced the damages ExxonMobil will have to pay for the Valdez oil spill in Alaska nearly 20 years ago. Here's AP's Diane Kepley.
The court ruled to dramatically cut the damages awarded in the 1989 Exxon Valdez disaster from $2.5 billion to $500 million. The initial number had been set by a federal appeals court, which had cut a previous ruling in half. The court ruling was 5-3. Justice Samuel Alito took no part in the case because he owns Exxon stock. Nearly 33,000 Alaskans are in line to share in the award, which would be about $15,000 a person. The case involves a tanker accident which dumped 11 million gallons of crude into Prince William Sound.
I might mention that Justice Samuel Alito, who had to opt out of the Valdez ruling and opinion and case, he did dissent in the rape decision. He felt that Louisiana was justified in imposing the death penalty for child rape. By the way, 44 states prohibit the death penalty for any kind of rape. 5 states besides Louisiana have allowed it for child rapists. Montana, Oklahoma, South Carolina allow executions in these cases if the defendant has previously been convicted of raping a child. Georgia's case is broader. Their statute is actually broader than this. We've got another call. Let's go to Linda in Dallas. Linda, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to address the fact that so many people say that the death penalty is not a deterrent. And I would just like to say that the death penalty certainly is a deterrent for that person. That person will not be committing the crime again. And we're always talking about, well, if they go to prison, they'll be rehabilitated. And they're not rehabilitated either. So So I am completely in agreement with the death penalty, and especially for child rape.
Thank you, Linda. We appreciate your call. Next up, the ACLU is spending lots of money, $335 million, to increase its presence in heartland states, including Texas. Our next guest, Kelly Shackelford, says the battle plan is to bully you, your church, and your children. We'll talk about it next.
I thought my life was too busy for me to get a master's degree, but Criswell College makes it easy. Did you know that you can now get a Master of Divinity degree in just one day a week? If I can fit this into my schedule, I know you can too. Come to Criswell College on Mondays and increase your education for more effective ministry. With concentrations in pastoral ministry, evangelism, Jewish studies, counseling, philosophy, and more, you can build your personal ministry with a master's degree or go on to get your doctorate. You'll study with some of the most distinguished professors in the nation and get plenty of hands-on experience outside the classroom. All it takes is one day a week. Come join me and my friends on the Criswell College campus and get your Master of Divinity degree. One day, one place. The new MDiv Monday program at Criswell College. Call us at 800-899-0012 or check us out at criswell.edu.
Invest in God's kingdom and in yourself through the Criswell College. See us on the web at criswell.edu. That's criswell.edu.
You're listening to Jerry Johnson Live. Now here's Penna Dexter.
The court is keeping with its theories in the child rape case, looking back to their exclusion of juveniles, the exclusion of the mentally retarded, and saying the country has moved away from the death penalty for these kinds of offenders or offenses.
That's Richard Dieter again, the executive director of the Death Penalty Information Center. He thinks the ruling handed down by the Supreme Court today regarding the death penalty for child rapists in Louisiana, striking that down, is fine, just fine with him. With us to discuss that and many other things, including the fact that the ACLU is expanding its presence in the heartland, including the state of Texas. Watch your freedoms, folks. With us to talk about all of this is Kelly Shackelford, and he is chief counsel for Liberty Legal Institute, which is the leading group in Texas defending religious freedoms and First Amendment rights for citizens groups and churches. He's a frequent guest on the program. He's also president of the Free Market Foundation. Hi, Kelly.
Hey, Penna.
Well, we have so much to talk with you about. Let's get right to it. First, I want your thoughts on two cases announced, their decisions announced today by the Supreme Court. First, this child rape decision. What do you think?
It's an outrageous decision. It's another unfortunate example of rank judicial activism. Even the basis for which they give their decision, this is not somebody else talking about the court. This is what they say themselves, the so-called, the majority, which are the liberals in the court, plus Justice Kennedy, who kind of changes positions case by case. But they say that they have to use, quote, evolving standards to figure out whether...
It's that old living, breathing Constitution.
Exactly. And it's based upon both, and this is, again, a quote, both on consensus and their own independent judgment. I mean, what essentially you have here is some justices who have the arrogance and the lack of restraint to think that they will make themselves into sort of a super legislature, and they'll decide what laws they'll allow and what they won't, not based upon some words in the Constitution, but based upon their own beliefs about what they think is right. And that is a total violation of our system of government and the way things are supposed to work. And I think Justice Alito and Scalia and Thomas and Roberts in their dissent point out a lot of the flaws with the arguments made in the majority, but I think the way they end it is classic, because they point out how ridiculous it is. They say, in summary, the court is holding that the cruel and unusual, Eighth Amendment provision rules out the death penalty even in the most extreme cases of child rape, even though this holding is not supported by the original meaning of the Eighth Amendment, that the earlier precedent does not support the result, that there are no reliable, objective ways of supporting the court's position, and that sustaining the constitutionality of the state law wouldn't extend or expand the death penalty at all. And they point out that under this approach that they're taking, no legislature can make the death penalty be an option, even if the child rapist committed numerous child rapes in the most heinous ways and in the most ridiculous of circumstances. These five people in their view, godlike wisdom, are going to overrule juries, are going to overrule states, and they're not going to allow us as citizens to make those decisions that certain situations people really do deserve the death penalty, as in this case where it was an 8-year-old child.
Right. You know, this big sweep of the child prostitution ring just sort of coming down on the same day, it's kind of interesting, and I think people are pretty emotional about it. I know the governor, Bobby Jindal, was just furious over this ruling. But Kelly, let's go on. Do you have an opinion on the Exxon Valdez ruling? I mean, in a sense, it seems like they've already paid enough.
Yeah, I haven't studied that case in depth to know. I have mixed feelings usually about the courts involving themselves in damage amounts. I like the idea of letting juries, although I do think there obviously have to be some rationale for it. But I don't have a huge opinion on that. It's one of those things where you have people on both sides, and you have people. You know, you'll have people agreeing that don't usually agree. So I think it's one of those deals where judges can disagree, where there can be some dispute, unlike the case, you know, the child rape case, which is really, I mean, it's just incredible if you understand how our system is supposed to work and the complete violation of judicial propriety in what they're doing and really taking power into their hands that was not given to them under our laws, and really making themselves into the super legislature. And some of the arguments they make, Penna, are as they say, well, look, if you look at the trends, you know, we're really not trending towards these type of laws. And it's like, well, what does that have to do with what the Constitution says?
Like the Supreme Court is supposed to go with popular opinion. That's why we have a court, to interpret the Constitution.
And here's what they did. They violated their own argument. If they really care about trends, which, again, is a foolish argument, they've just ended the trend, because now no one will be able to pass these laws,
mm-hmm.
no matter what the people believe. So it is incredibly anti-democratic, anti our form of government opinion, and it's an example why we have got to get control of these out-of-control judges, or they're going to take away our freedoms and our ability to decide the big moral issues of the day, which is supposed to be what we the people have the power to do.
Okay, one more question about the courts, because, you know, this was a split decision. The Exxon Valdez was a little more balanced on one side, and some people are saying that Roberts is pretty good at forming consensus, but he's not, you know, good enough, as we can see in this 5-4 decision. So what do you see? I mean, I know it depends on the election, but what do you see as far as the future of the court?
Well, it's pretty clear what you've got. You've got four conservatives on the court. You've got Chief Justice Roberts, you've got Alito, you've got Scalia, and you have Thomas. Their approach is the proper approach of a judge or a justice, which is, look, I'm going to restrain myself. Even though I might morally disagree with something the legislature passed, that's not my role. My role is to interpret the law. My role is to see, does it violate some words in the Constitution and the original intent of our founders? And if it doesn't, then even if I disagree with it, I'm going to lay hands off, because I'm not the legislature. I'm a judge. You've got four liberals on the court who are the exact opposite. They're going to enforce their views on the people, like in this decision today. Then you have Kennedy. And Justice Kennedy switches sides case by case. And is known for sort of being susceptible to wanting to be popular in the elitist circles in D.C.
Right.
And so you've got this switching back and forth, and so you have these opinions where one, they say, well, the liberal side won, and one, they say, the conservative side won, and so you're going to continue to have that until you have, you know, these justices change, and, of course, the next president will probably have a chance to appoint, you know, a one or two justices, and that could either make the court more liberal, or it could actually flip it to where it's 5-4 conservative.
That'd be great.
A big change in a lot of opinions.
Okay, the ACLU loves an activist court, though, and you know we get these press releases from the ACLU here at Jerry Johnson Live. I don't know why, but we got one saying that they are calling to end mandatory prayer at the U.S. Naval Academy. And, you know, this is just the type of thing they do. They squelch religious freedom all the time. So, Kelly, just talk about this expansion into the heartland, why they're doing it, and what is Liberty Legal planning on doing about it?
Well, I think it's important, and I think it's important that you know, your listeners know about this. I mean, this is not some secret. They made an announcement. This is a $335 million expansion. The pretty notorious and well-known liberal George Soros has funded a significant amount of this. They're already at $258 million. And they specifically said that one of the main targets they have is they're going to at least double their operation in Texas. They're going to bring the ACLU values and belief system and try to force it throughout Texas like they're doing in other states. And so, I don't know any other way to tell people this. I mean, I know people sit around a lot of times and they think, you know, look, I feel kind of helpless against this left-wing onslaught and the ACLU. Well, you know, it's in your backyard now. And so the question is, are we going to stand against this? And so what we've done is we started a little campaign that we're getting out there. People can go to our website, but we're letting people sign up to be a part. And our goal is about 10,000 troops that we want to be in prayer, that we want to stand against them. Sort of our visual is when they come to our border, we want to be standing at the border waiting for them, and we want to see them, the whites of their eyes, and know that we're ready.
What's your website?
It's they can go to just freemarket.org, and they'll see a big ACLU click. And this is a deal to spread around, because most people in our churches probably have no idea of this effort that's coming to Texas. And if you want to see where it goes, just look at what they did Monday in California. The people in California put on their ballot the right of the people to vote on marriage being a man and a woman. The ACLU on Monday filed suit saying the people should not be allowed to vote on that.
Yeah, they're crazy. And you know what? It's showing up. And we've learned this in the last maybe 10 years, that when we show up for the battle, we often win. If we don't show up, we don't win. You guys have been here. You've been winning cases. You've been working hard. And you are really a bulwark against some of this clamping down on religious freedom. And now the battle's going to get more heated, isn't it?
It is. And, I mean, Penn, as usual, you're ahead of the ball game here. I mean, I really believe what you said is the truth, which is, the ACLU wins these cases because nobody shows up. And if you look at where they've won and they've really gained, it's because there was nobody on the other side. They've come into Texas a couple of times outside of New York and with their other attorneys. And every time so far they've come, we've been there and we've had, you know, we've handed their hat to them and they've left the state, losing the lawsuit. And so I think the key is they think they're going to have enough resources, enough power to where we won't be able to be everywhere they are in Texas. And we're going to try to remedy that. We plan to be everywhere they are, and I think it's key. If they know we're here, if we're watching everything they do, and if we're responding and even doing our own aggressive initiatives to even set them back, then I think this is going to be a failing proposition for them. But that's up to us. If we don't stand and we let them go places and don't show up on the other side to speak the truth and point to the words in the Constitution, then we're going to have the law perverted like it has been in other places.
Thanks, Kelly.
You're listening to Jerry Johnson Live. Now here's Penna Dexter.
Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man call himself a patriot who would labor to subvert these finest props of the duties of men and citizens. The mere politician and the pious man ought to respect and to cherish religion and morality. And he added, let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion.
That's Ronald Reagan quoting George Washington, and in Washington's farewell address, of course, he voiced reservations about the idea that there could be wise public policy without a firm moral religious foundation. And it's amazing when you hear one of the candidates for president talking about his religion and sort of using it as a campaign prop. But then, as we discussed yesterday, saying that religiously informed values, because they're informed by religion, can't be a reason for public policy, that you've got to broaden it and sort of reduce it to what Dr. Dobson called the lowest common denominator, is sort of a paradox there. But we've got someone on the line with us now to talk about the first president, George Washington, and why he thought religion should inform public policy, and why he thought the church-state wall, that wall of separation, was actually anti-democratic. We will also take your calls, because we're going to ask her about the Supreme Court rulings today. But she is Tara Ross, and Tara Ross is the author of a new book, which is entitled Under God, George Washington and the Question of Church and State. She's also an attorney here in the Dallas area, a graduate of Rice University and University of Texas Law School. She has another book, Enlightened Democracy, The Case for the Electoral College. Sounds interesting. Tara, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Tara, first of all, before we get to your book, can you just give me your thoughts on especially the Supreme Court ruling on the death penalty for child rapists? We've been discussing that earlier on the program.
You know, actually, I was just now reading that when I was...
I haven't given you much time, have I?
I'm sorry?
I haven't given you much time.
No, I mean, I was reading it during the commercial, but, the interesting thing, I mean, it's just one of those cases, right, where Justice Kennedy is just, again, going on about how he feels, basically, instead of just applying the law. And I was looking at this really unbelievable quote. He says, "In those difficult cases, the critical ingredient is supplied by what is in the judge's heart."
Oh, how disgusting.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's Obama. Either way. Either way.
Well, that makes my case, Tara. Thank you very much. This election is very important. Let's just take a quick call because we've got somebody waiting to talk about the Supreme Court case. It's Gayla in Ennis. Gayla, very quickly.
Hi, yes. My original question was for Kelly Shackelford, but what can I do as a person, as a Christian in Texas and a Republican voting Christian, what can I do to draw attention to where we can sign petitions or we can start drives to have these justices that are making these awful, awful decisions for us? I mean, what can we do? I know that.
Hey, Tara, do you have any thoughts on that?
Gosh, I mean, it's just...
I mean, it's not easy to impeach a judge, and there's got to be a lot of reason for doing that.
I think the best thing we can always do is just to educate people. I mean, whether it's your friends or your neighbors or people you go to church with or whatever it is, I mean, just there are so many people that don't really understand what's going on. And, you know, like I said, they'll just listen to the results of a case and not really get into what's going on or how dangerous it is. Like, even if they, not today's case, but maybe another case, agree with the results and not stop to think, you know, this reasoning that this judge is using, it turned out well for me this time, but if judges can always use this kind of, you know, I feel like doing it this way because that's the way the world is headed rationale, I mean, they can use it in ways like that go against you, as the rape case did today.
Tara, you know, we're talking about Barack Obama and the fact that he said in a speech, which Dr. Dobson highlighted yesterday, and we also highlighted on this program, that the Bible can be a dangerous guide for public policy. But that's not what George Washington would have thought, is it?
It's like the opposite of what George Washington would have thought. And I love that you had that Reagan saying George Washington's words when you started this. Washington thought the complete opposite. He thought that if you want to have a successful self-governing nation, then you need to have morality and virtue, and you can't possibly have morality and virtue without religion. I would think most importantly, including the religious text, such as the Bible.
Yeah, really. All right. What sort of heightened your interest in George Washington and what he would have thought about these things? What brought you to take the trouble to write this book? I mean, you're a busy lawyer.
Well, I think my general interest is just, you mentioned my first book was about the Electoral College. My general interest really is just about helping Americans to understand their founding and what went into the Constitution generally, in many ways. And the schools are not going to teach us. So we're going to have to figure it out ourselves and learn from each other. And I really think it's important because if we don't know where we are and what the Constitution really means, not with all these emotional judges think it means, then, you know, how are we going to know where we're going either? So that's really my general interest. My co-author was really the one who zeroed in on the fact that nobody has written this book about George Washington yet, which I did not realize until he brought it to my attention.
All right. The co-author is Joseph C. Smith, Jr., and Tara Ross is my guest, and her new book with Mr. Smith is Under God, George Washington and the Question of Church and State. Now, many of the court decisions, Tara, as I'm sure you explain in your book, are informed by this idea of a wall of separation between church and state. They say that Thomas Jefferson believed there should be one. He did mention it in a letter to the Danbury Baptist. But can you explain what George Washington would have thought of that and also what Thomas Jefferson really meant by that?
Well, George Washington did not agree with separation. To the contrary, he thought there should be kind of a mutually supportive relationship between government and religious entities. And he thought each had something to bring to the other, basically, and that's just kind of the way he saw it. He did also think it was really important to recognize religious freedom in this country. We are accountable to God, not to man, for our beliefs, ultimately. And Washington, I think, knew that better than anybody because he was the head of a really diverse army with soldiers from 13 different states and 13 different religious establishments. But he also knew that if he didn't have religion and he didn't have that he would not have morality, and he would not have an organized army that was disciplined and had good morale. When he was president, he knew that the people would just not be able they would have no virtue. They wouldn't be able to govern themselves. I think Thomas Jefferson, when he wrote that letter, he was certainly more separationist than many people in his generation. And, in fact, when he wrote the letter, it was not very well received. But I don't think he was anywhere near a separationist as what, you know, people are today. I think he probably, in all likelihood, meant it to apply just to the federal government and not to the state's government. And whatever he meant, you know, he went to church in the United States Capitol a few days later.
Right.
So it's a little confusing. I mean, clearly whatever he meant, he did not mean the stark separation.
All right, Tara, but isn't it any separation that's even been mentioned by Thomas Jefferson, isn't it supposed to mean that the federal government would not impose religion on the citizens? Not the other way around.
I think Jefferson, it's hard. I mean, Jefferson, I think a couple things. One is he knew what he was saying. He was advocating it. He knew the Constitution didn't require it. I do think that he thought that the federal government should be pretty separate from religion, more separate than many people around him thought at that time.
Okay.
I do not think that he was nearly a separationist as people.
All right, let me get you back to Washington, because
sure,
that's what your book's about. What would he have thought? Because now we have a lot, you know, it was pretty much of a Christian consensus back during the days of the founders. Now we've got some other religions. We're still the majority, Christians are, the sort of the Judeo-Christian worldview. Is the majority, but we have these, you know, we have like Islam, we have Buddhism, we have Hinduism. So, you know, Obama said that we are a Buddhist nation too, you know, and we're a Hindu nation too. So what would Washington have said?
Well, like I said, Washington knew better than anybody that there was just is such a great diversity of religions in this country. There was less diversity then than there is now, I'm sure, but he did. There are documented cases where he made exceptions for Muslims and Jews in particular to pay a tax, for instance, that was going to go to Christian ministers. And he appointed a universalist chaplain because he thought it was, you know, important to have diversity. And there are other random incidents like that. So Washington knew that. But he was, when he spoke in public, he was more Judeo-Christian than not. And he was always, pretty much always monotheistic. And there might have been a couple of exceptions with the Indians, but he was pretty much monotheistic Judeo-Christian. I think you kind of have to, at this point, distinguish between what is constitutional and what's a good policy idea. If there are some people that say, well, we have a greater diversity of religions now, therefore, insert example, prayer in schools is a bad idea. I think George Washington, I'm putting words in his mouth.
What would he have said about prayer in public schools?
I think he would have thought it was important for us to have religion in the public square. I know that. I think that he would have been sympathetic to those who want to have policy discussions or legislative arguments about what's a good idea. He would not have understood somebody who said it wasn't constitutional to pray in the school. You know, I mean,
would he have thought it was okay to have a manger on public property without any other secular items around it?
Really hard to see him having problems with any of these things. He ordered his soldiers to go to church. He ordered them to pray and to give thanks and to seek God's help before they were going into battle. When he issued his Thanksgiving Day proclamation, he spoke of the duty of nations to come together and pray to God, not their option, but their duty. So it is really hard to imagine Washington having problems with this. When I go back to the policy argument, the specific example that is leaping to mind is there was an issue with taxes in Virginia and whether they should be levied to support Christian ministers.
Right.
He supported that in the beginning, and over time he felt like the tax was causing such an uproar that as a policy matter, you know, maybe it should be revisited.
Okay. Tara, what a great sounding book. I think everybody ought to kind of get into this book and get a little bit more information. I want to have you back on the Electoral College. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, next up, I'm going to talk a little bit more. There is a call waiting, I think, and we will take it if it's still there. And those of you who want to call in on these issues we've been discussing today, we'd love to hear from you. We're also going to talk a little bit more about California gay marriage.
I thought my life was too busy to get a master's degree, but Criswell College makes it easy. Did you know that you can now get a Master of Divinity degree in just one day a week? If I can fit this into my schedule, I know you can too. Come to Criswell College on Mondays and increase your education for more effective ministry. With concentrations in pastoral ministry, evangelism, Jewish studies, counseling, philosophy, and more, you can build your personal ministry with a master's degree or go on to get your doctorate. You'll study with some of the most distinguished professors in the nation and get plenty of hands-on experience outside the classroom. All it takes is one day a week. Come join me and my friends on the Criswell College campus and get your Master of Divinity degree. One day, one place. MDiv Monday at Criswell College. Call us at 800-899-0012 or check us out at criswell.edu. That's criswell.edu.
Invest in God's kingdom and in yourself through the Criswell College. See us on the web at criswell.edu. That's criswell.edu.
You're listening to Jerry Johnson Live. Now here's Penna Dexter.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining me today on Jerry Johnson Live. I'm sitting in for Dr. Jerry Johnson, and we've been talking this week, we've been mentioning it, this huge survey that was done by the Pew organization of 35,000 adults. That's a huge, massive survey. And basically, the conclusion is Americans are saying, my faith isn't the only way to heaven. Others are interpreting it to say that Americans are now more tolerant. The survey shows that one sociologist analyzed it this way. He said the survey shows religion in America is indeed 3,000 miles wide and only 3 inches deep. That's Michael Lindsay, a Rice University sociologist. And only 14% in this survey cite religious beliefs as the main influence on their political thinking. This is what I wanted to bring out of this today in this program. Religion plays an indirect role, but only 14% cite this as an influence on their political thinking. And this is what Barack Obama wants you to think. This is the way he wants people to think. He doesn't want their religion to inform they're thinking on issues like abortion, on issues like homosexuality and others. And I think we have to stand against this. Now, on Friday, Dr. Barry Creamer will be in, and he is going to unpack this survey point by point. And you won't want to miss that. That'll be on Friday. But I am taking your calls. We've had just some hot button Supreme Court rulings, actually one today, saying that the state of Louisiana or any state cannot impose the death penalty for child rape. And a lot of people are angry about this. It was a 5-4 decision. Justice Kennedy was the swing vote, and, you know, the liberal justices went one way. They supported this, and Kennedy was with them, and that's why it was a 5-4 decision. But Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia wrote the dissenting opinion. But I want to hear from you. So Bert is in San Angelo listening on KCRN. Bert, thanks for waiting.
Thanks. I just want to let you know I listen to you, Dr. Johnson, every day driving back and forth from San Angelo to Big Spring, 90
wow.
miles one
long
way.
Drive.
And I just had a comment about the Supreme Court ruling today concerning no death penalty for child rape. It's absolutely ludicrous that they would overturn a state's decision, and this just really should give the American people a wake-up call to get behind John McCain because when he becomes president, he can put some rational constitutional justices on the Supreme Court.
You know, there's some really I've got an article from the Dallas Morning News that says Texas evangelical Republicans reluctantly backed McCain. Of course, they had the Republican convention a couple of weeks ago. And for various reasons, people aren't all that excited about McCain, but they are backing him. But I think when you hear, Bert, cases like this, and when you think about the fact that the Supreme Court is at stake, you can get a little bit more excited about somebody that you've got to hold your nose on certain issues about, can't you?
Absolutely, and the American people they better be wary of Mr. Barack Obama, because he is dangerous. And the other reason that we need to get behind John McCain is to keep our country safe. And Barack Obama would do exactly the opposite.
Well, of course, and that's a subject for another day. Thank you, Bert. Appreciate your call. And, you know, as we said yesterday, and this sort of comes out of the whole way that Jim Dobson highlighted Barack Obama's distortion of the scriptures, and really the way Barack Obama made his points on this issue reflects a position that is a Democratic Party position in a sense, pre-2008, and that's that you must check your fate at the gate of the public arena. They're talking more about faith and more about religion now, and Barack Obama has this messianic aura, but these statements were very, very clear in saying that your faith should not inform your political views on issues like abortion, which I thought was ridiculous and amazing. Obama also has been planning these, well, really thousands of what he's calling American values house parties. And he brings participants there to discuss himself and religion. And he's also trying to have a presence on Christian radio and in blogs. So he's still trying to appeal to the religious vote. But in a sense, he's got a funny way of doing so. Well, let's go to David in San Angelo. David's calling in. We're glad to have our San Angelo callers. David, thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me. I just wanted to say that I believe that God is not against the death penalty, because his own son died a horrible death, much more than anyone does in the U.S. nowadays, which was one of the recent contentions. But I think God could have performed a miracle by releasing the thief who asked Jesus to remember him in his kingdom. But Jesus allowed him to also die and told him that today you're going to be with me in paradise. So I just want to express that I feel that God is not against the death penalty because his own son did so.
And certainly the death penalty was given in biblical times for things other than murder. When Dr. Johnson is back in the studio, we need to have a show on the death penalty, because he has just wonderful ethical arguments regarding the death penalty, and I've heard him give a class on it. And so I'm hoping that he'll share that with all of you. I think that this Supreme Court decision could be a news peg to do that with. Thank you so much for calling in, David. Brian is in Weatherford. Brian, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment just on the matter of appointment of particular judges and how it might affect particularly weighing in on abortion. In terms of Barack Obama as a candidate, my wife at the seminary in Fort Worth and recently read an article put out by the Baptist Press that was detailing his view as far as babies that were born but intended to be aborted and then left to die on the table.
Right. That was when he was in the Illinois Senate, and there was a bill that was sort of one of those born alive protection bills, because there were cases. This one nurse brought to light the fact that babies from these botched abortions, or actually the way they aborted was to have the baby born alive, and they would just allow them to die. And that's just ridiculous. I mean, that's just horrible. And she would end up holding these babies until they die, because she just felt so horrible about it. She ended up bringing this to light. They ended up introducing a bill to give these babies medical care, and Obama voted against it. He's been against any life-affirming legislation that you can possibly imagine, including the ban on partial birth abortion. He's clearly against that. He's the most pro-abortion senator in the Senate, and his views on this issue are just, they're pro-abortion, flat out. And he doesn't like to be called that, but that's exactly what he is. Brian, thanks for bringing that in. And really, life has to be the important issue, I think, in the minds of Christians, because it's very important to God. Well, I didn't get to talk to you about California and gay marriage, but we'll do that later in the week. The other issue I think that should be very important, though, in the minds of Christians is family, because God created the family, and the family is his way of adding people to the culture of procreation, and it's also his way of caring for children. We've been talking today about the rape of children. God's way is for a mom and a dad to bear and care for their own children. Ladies and gentlemen, join us tomorrow. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to Jerry Johnson Live, a Christian Worldview radio show. Join Dr. Jerry Johnson, president of Criswell College and Criswell Communications, Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. for an hour of relevant discussion of news and culture from a Christian perspective.